Welcome to Taking the Rams by the Horns, a podcast that takes current affairs out of current affairs. This is a podcast in partnership with Sowetan Live. I'm your host, Rams Mabote. South Africa is alive with possibilities. I mean, who would have imagined a former president in jail? A sitting president sleeping on cash, literally. A cabinet minister visiting a common prisoner in jail. Or even the post office operating, even when they have nothing to do.
Can you confirm that delivery performance has dropped?
Welcome to the new Sowetan Live podcast called Taking the Rams by the Horns with me, Rams Mabote. Each week, I will be taking a lighter look at very serious topics that half the time drive you up the wall. This podcast will use humor to take no prisoners, have no holy cows, and cook a whole lot of sacrificial lambs. The general election season has taken us by storm for almost a year now. They have filled large arenas and stadiums, as well as churches and dance floors. They came in buses, taxis, and some in G-Wagons. The leaders, neatly dressed and feasting on fine food and good bubbly, while the poor were once again treated to fried chicken and the burning sun. And finally, we have reached the last mile. It has been a revolution akin to topless pole dancing, with a plethora of promises, flaunting of rare successes, and generally teasing the voters to crave for more. If it were not an election, each show would be something like a strip club. In exactly 6 days, millions will put their axes next to their party of choice. Will the poor topple the rich? Will the rulers be caught naked? Will the communists show their Wabenzi colors? Or will new self-styled Robin Hoods rob from the poor to give to the rich again? Democracy was designed to be the most civilized way to choose governments, but in election season, democracy is turned into a joke. 1 minute, a politician appearing in court for corruption is accusing the ruling party of being corrupt. And the very next, a man who founded a party is fired by a man who can't go to parliament. As for the incumbents, they have suddenly remembered their advertising budgets and they are bombarding us with their lies of successes, while the main opposition went for shock and awe, burning the flag. And others will even redesign the clock as we know it. What's it going to be come May 31 when the Independent Electoral Commission announces the final results of your vote? Who's going to grow bigger? Whose head is going to fall down in a third after being decapitated out of politics? Who is going to parade themselves to suit us as coalitions are formed? My guest today is political analyst and executive director of Rivonia Circle, and for his sins, a former broadcaster, Lukhona Mnguni, and is going to help you and me to see how the landscape is going to look like after your ex has solved the why next Wednesday. Stay tuned. This may even sway you to change your vote last minute.
Hey, Mhlekazi Molo.
Molo, molo, dada.
Good to see you.
No, thank you very much. I've never been here. I've always watched from a distance. Yo, abanyana bayathandwa yazi South Africa.
So, okay, I saved the last, the best for last, right? Because if, think about it. This is the last pre-election chat I'm having. And I decided I'm going to give it to non-political party, but to talk to somebody with brains. And you can't trust them. You can't trust those guys.
How's your brain after talking to so many politicians?
No. But I'm still better than I see other broadcasters, you know, in the conventional media. Yeah. Every day.
Yeah. For an hour.
I'll die. Mm. And then you have to...
You people.
Yeah. I hope my friend does not know I'm talking about him.
Yeah.
Then you interview... Cyril, right?
Yes.
And then he says, no, no, we are dealing with the Palapala matter. Like, no, my God, answer is wrong. You can't be saying
that. Wait, you mean what, in 2024?
Yeah, and he's, no, he's saying it this week. No, no, he's dealing. 2024. He's like, oh, we're dealing with, like, what?
No. What? Which Palapala?
Ah, no. So I'm happy here. And I'm happy to have you here. Thank you for coming.
No, thank you, Rams. You're doing good work here. Fantastic. Having fun while at work. That's good.
I'm really having a good time. Yeah, but you know, I have to ask this question because I've been hearing this a lot.
Mm.
Are these elections that crucial since 1994? You know, everybody's repeating this. And if so, why?
You know, Rams, I always say every election ought to be more crucial than the previous one.
Yeah.
Because what it means is that there is a greater excitement and the project of democratization and consolidating democracy is actually gaining steam and momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So in that instance, yes, it is important for every election not to feel like there's a regression of sorts. What makes this election a watershed election in many ways is the sheer possibility that keeps gazing on us, that the African National Congress, the ANC, which in 1994 was, dare I say, guaranteed,
was the only party in town
elections. Yeah. I mean, I remember as a kid, of course, I was not voting. I wasn't like you guys. I'm not that old.
I don't know why that is necessary.
But let's put that aside. But I remember as a young kid in 1994, you know, those excitements of Asiba vote lopo pa yes, Mkhonto is the real Mkhonto is and you know, at that time the ANC was really the party in town. Even white people were excited support Madiba and all of this. We go into this election with the ANC, first of all, not guaranteed that it will win a decisive majority in this election. We go into this election with the ANC not having a leader like Madiba who enthuses even the people who may not vote for him.
Yeah.
And I think we go into this election with the ANC really confronted with a battle for survival. And it's quite clear in how they are rolling out, you know, every stalwart. You know, if it were clothes, we would say, "Gutintito analezia, So the ANC is really, really, really putting up a serious fight for survival. And I think we are also going into this election. I mean, I think in 1994, how many parties were on the ballot? Less than 15 or something like that. And we're going to the ballot with 52 political parties. So the menu is quite large. And we're going into this election with 27.2 million registered voters. So, I mean, the story of our democracy is improving. And it does make this a critical election. I mean, for starters, even if the ANC were to get a decisive majority nationally, but for the first time, this province in which we are seated is going to be a coalition government.
Well, it was almost a coalition government.
And that is counting just for the interests of the listener.
In the previous election, they almost were.
Well, some people are still
saying, there's still an argument about this, right?
What happened
in Alex
and Soweto there when the results stopped coming in? But we're not people of conspiracy theories here, Rams.
Let me tell you my biggest surprise about 2024. That as we go to vote next Wednesday, in that ballot, there'll still be Patriotic Alliance. You know, when they started, I thought they were a joke.
No, of course.
These guys will disappear.
And most people, by the way, most people don't know that Patriotic Alliance was actually on the ballot in 2019.
Yes, people don't know this.
And they got about 6,600 votes.
And here we are, they're going to be, at least those two gentlemen guaranteed to go to the National Assembly, I think.
No, definitely National Assembly, Western Cape Legislature, Gauteng Legislature, maybe Northern Cape Legislature as well. I mean, they are the proverbial...
I tend to forget about the Northern Cape. I'm so sorry, guys. My friends in Kuruman especially.
No, please, let's apologize to the people of the Northern Cape. I mean, they make about, less than 700,000 people on the voters' roll, but it's okay. There are no shades.
They still matter.
Every vote matters, Rams, please.
But you have to agree, man of the match in these elections has to be, I'm not sure whether I should say the man
or the party, but MK party and its leader. They have to win that award of man of the match of this
elections. Yeah, I mean, MK party, very curious, very interesting. I'm interested in MK party. They really fascinate me. So, I mean, if I could, I would. In fact, after elections, I do want to interview quite a number of people from MK party, just for my own curiosity in terms of the backroom operation. Because I think we focus a lot on
the man.
On Zuma and him being a point of attraction. But we fail to see other things. I mean, there's clearly a communications machinery at MK that is quite clear in terms of selling the message and what they do best in terms of what I call propaganda.
Yeah.
There's clearly an infrastructure for propaganda, whether you believe they use real people or they use bots. But if you stick just to the messaging, I was surprised by February, March, I mean, the whole thing of people being unhappy with the ANC off Cyril Ramaphosa.
Yes, so right.
It wasn't just the ANC were unhappy. Yeah. They didn't leave the ANC because they're unhappy. Actually, one guy, I was doing a focus group in Durban with a group from Kwamashu.
Yeah.
He said in the focus group, no. We are unhappy with the ANC of Cyril Ramaphosa. If Cyril Ramaphosa was to go, we would go back to the ANC. I
said, wow.
What do you mean? And that kind of message and the ability to sell it and for people to buy into it and to be disciplined about it and then to be advocates for it. That takes a bit of doing, and that takes a bit of understanding the psyche of the people that you are reaching out to. So for me, MK Party has been fascinating in terms of how it operates, in terms of how brand management is done. They also have a lot of money.
I mean, the last time we had this kind of excitement. Well, when we told everybody has to declare their sources of money.
Well, we haven't seen any declarations from MK.
No, it's just ordinary human beings who are sending 10 rand each, and it's keeping them going, which shows you how big they are. But anyway,
it's a clearly mass-based.
Yes, without a doubt. But, I mean, the last time there was this kind of excitement just before elections about a new party has to be COPE, right?
No, of course. I mean, 2009. Yeah. Actually, I've just done a piece for Financial Mail colleagues.
Yeah.
And I was asked to write about opposition parties and the changing landscape of opposition politics. And I don't think you can talk about the changing, you know, landscape of opposition politics without going back 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's a party, and I started the National Convention that was held in Sentin.
Yeah.
By the way, funny story, Raps. That same weekend, COPE was having before there was COPE, the National Convention. If you remember well, that weekend of the 31st of October, 1st of November, what did Jay-Z do that weekend?
As ANC president? I don't remember.
You don't remember? He held a rally at Jabulani Amphitheater in
Soweto. Yes, I remember now. Yes. A deflection.
And what did he say in his speech?
Wow.
At that time, Jay-Z was really in charge of the ANC. Yes. He had just emerged out of Pulukwane, that got rid of Thabo Mbeki. He had not taken up presidency. Yep. That was caretaker President Mutlante's time. And it's amazing to go back to that moment 15 years later. And how
now
he's sitting on the other side. So much can happen in 15 years.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I mean, so I've written a piece, you know, you can't think of opposition policy, because what COPE did, both in its success and failure, was to affect the people who really are meant to give life to opposition politics, and those are voters, not the politicians. And 1.3 million people.
That's a big number, right? Especially in 2009,
when the ANC was at its absolute dominance.
Yeah.
And the country wasn't doing that badly as it is now, right? I mean, of course, there had been a bit of load shedding here and there.
Yeah.
But there was also a lot of excitement into that '09. The 2010 World Cup was coming.
Yeah.
Figures like your, you know, Archbishop Desmond Tutu were still alive and very much part of our public life and injecting enthusiasm and hope and all and reassurance to people. The ANC was not weak at all. I mean, and other people who were said to leave the ANC did not leave and they remained behind.
Some actually fairly came back. Yeah, I mean, like strongly so.
Your Trevor Manuel, your Tito Mboweni, they were still there and all of that. And here is a party launched 16 December 2008 and the elections were in April 2009, 4 months to campaign. And they get 30 seats in the National Assembly. Okay. So yes, indeed, there hasn't been an excitement. But actually my conclusion, even though MK is there, my conclusion in the piece that I've actually written recently, which should publish in this week, is that there isn't a Cope moment in this election, because MK, unlike Cope, doesn't stand for, it actually induces fear in some people that this party, led by the president, the former president who actually failed this country so much, can actually be a role player and make people vote for it. So there's that fear as to, whereas the act of associating with Cope back then was an act of courage and an act of giving hope. I mean, even then,
Others were claiming is the act of saving the real AIDS.
And others were claiming, I mean, which I think partly led to the demise of Cope, because a lot of people in Cope then did not give themselves time to reimagine politics outside of the, you know, prism of the ANC. And they were always looking for this ANC Gatambo or something like that.
Yeah.
But the failure of Cope then deflated the enthusiasm of voters to take risks with new parties.
Well, here's a man who's taking a risk. I mean, according to a poll, and I'm not sure about the veracity of the ENC and Mark Data second election poll of 2024. I mean, they say
stick to your lane, Jim.
Expecting a 14.5% reward for the MK party nationally. I mean, it's a
look. I mean, Rams, I mean, when the initial poll came out in February, the Mark Data poll, I actually made a comment on Twitter to say that I think KZN, from a research methodology point of view, is going to misbehave in terms of the samples and depending on the sample sizes and where you believe the concentration of sampling needs to be. And as a result, I mean, if you look here, so to get to 14% nationally for MK, you need MK, as it is showing here, to be at about 46.4% in KZN.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to win. I mean, it's almost a win. And the ANC to collapse from about 54% plus
to 11%. It's almost implausible. Right?
It's not possible. What is clear for me here is that I'm not sure how the colleagues at MacData are sampling, but it's quite clear that their samples are misbehaving. And what I had actually suggested on Twitter is that if I had a chance to do a poll, I would sample KZN three times and then match the behavior of these three samples as to whether, because these are meant to be random samples, right?
Yeah.
And then check how far off one another are the behaviors of these three samples for the same province. Because the thing with new parties is, and of course with polls in general, is that some people may overstate who they are voting for. But for the ANC to be at about 11.1%, they probably would need to lose almost 2 million votes in KwaZulu-Natal. I don't think that is possible. I really, and then I think because KZN is the second highest, you know, province in terms of registered voters, then the entire national picture that we see in this study is a bit skewed.
But it is not far-fetched that they will make a big dent in KZN.
No. There's no doubt about it that the MK party in KZN will have significant inroads.
And taking only from the ANC?
Largely from the ANC. I think if you look at how KZN is parceled up, I think MK will take largely from the ANC because of how the propaganda I spoke about is structured, which is dissatisfaction with the ANC of Ramaphosa.
Yeah.
The IFP has its own unique base, which depleted over to the ANC, yeah. which we have seen over a number of by-elections coming back.
Yeah, they've been doing exceptionally well in by-elections.
To the IFP.
Right?
There may well be those who wanted to migrate from the ANC to the IFP out of protest with the ANC, not because they still have some found love for the IFP and therefore yeah. might find a middle, you know, place, holding place in MK. We saw how the EFF grew in KZN in the 2019 elections. They grew almost fivefold from about 69,000 votes to over 350,000 votes between 2014 elections and 2019 elections. It's going to be a big test on them as to where did they get those votes from? Did they get those votes from hardcore ANC people, or did they get those votes from a number of young people who were
new part voters.
Of new voters and part of the ecosystem of the university elections that they were winning and all of that? Because if when I patterned out where that growth was happening, it was mainly urbanized growth. So places like Richards Bay, Pietermaritzburg, Durban, Port Shepstone, Kokstad, Kambatini, and so on. That's where the EFF was growing in 2019. It's going to be interesting to see whether they're going to grow or they're going to decrease, and that decrease. Is it going to MK? You know, a friend of mine actually put it well, because sometimes, Rams, when we speak here, we tend to find very, you know, very complicated language to present things. A friend of mine just said to me, MK is a vibe.
A vibe?
It's a vibe. So people who actually are going after MK, they just want a part of a vibe. And because MK...
So dawn will come and they'll go home.
Yeah.
It's a vibe, man. 4 a.m. then go home. Yeah,
Cuban has a green point. You still have to leave because the vibe is gone.
Exactly.
So, and I do think it's actually quite a vibe. I don't see MK having longevity, I mean, to 2029 and stuff like that in a serious way. But the point here is that... So there is that vibe. They are taking, they may well take a little bit from the EFF. And then, of course, I mean, in some pockets, in Gauteng, in Mpumalanga particularly, I think they will also take something from the ANC. We'll have to see what the likes of, you know, now Ace Magashule coalescing around MK. They're not in MK.
No,
they're now stranded, you know, and they still need a vibe. They thought they were creating their own party.
He says something fascinating, by the way, Ace, in a recent interview that almost implied that he is sticking to his, is it ACM?
ACT.
ACT. He's sticking to his ACT because he could not conclude his conversation with MK. I thought, what? So should I vote for you on that basis? But anyway, so other than the fact that JZ finally discovered that he's better speaking Sizulu than English, what makes MK sexy, really?
It's the idea that because the former president is part of it, MK could win. In the psyche of people, the thing that makes political parties struggle, people love being part of a winning thing.
Yeah.
Nobody convinces themselves, like your soccer team, that...
that's not... continue.
Nobody convinces themselves that I'm going into this match to lose.
Yeah.
But you may find some opposition politicians who are actually quite sensible to say, we know you're not going to win in this election. Well, what do we want? To get a foot in the door and really show what can be done by parliamentarians to restore trust of, you know, voters and citizens into politics and so on. But man, when you see JZ and the hall is packed, former president, and he has a following, and suddenly after he's announced, this thing starts sprawling across the country, you start believing that perhaps these are the people who could beat you know, the other guys. But let's also accept that we've said ourselves, Rams, at times, hey, this politician lacks charisma. What does that mean? JZ has charisma.
Well, in South African politics, he's got charisma.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it must count for something.
Yeah.
That charisma must count for something.
Listen, I always tell this story. It was just after Polokwan, right? And I'll never forget being called to this room with 70 people.
Yeah.
70 odd people. And I was one of the two people who were not Zulu in that room. He arrived 2 hours late, which is normally what he does.
Of course.
And he still got us to introduce ourselves to him one by one.
All
said, yeah, he said, you guys know me, so I need to know who you are.
Oh, wow.
When it got to me, and I said, and, you know, so you, as you can imagine, the other people were introducing themselves. So I then stood up and I said my name and I said, I got a meaning is Lagaza, Nagnas is Tagazel. And he guffaws as he does, right?
Yeah.
And then later in the, during the program, there's question and answer session, and I stand up to ask a question. He says, ah, Umsutwa. That's that guy.
Now you are dislodged.
I'm mesmerized by this guy now. I even told people, he's actually a nice guy.
That's what Helen Zille told us when she had a meeting with him at Union Building,
right?
And said, no, President Zuma is very charming, and that's what he does. That's the nature, and that's the appeal of the man. And I mean, I do a lot of focus groups as part of the work we do at Livonia Circle, and in one of the focus groups, you know, just testing people's knowledge about different politicians and how they feel about them. So I say, when I say Jacob Zuma, what comes to mind? And this lady in the focus group says, the man. I say, okay, what does that mean? The man with a capital T.
Wow.
I didn't probe further because I could tell where this is going.
I can almost suspect.
The man. The point is that JZ has qualities as a person that a number of people actually like. And you can't take that away from him. Whether you believe those people are making a right or wrong decision in service of the country, but we must accept that politics is not always a question of rationality.
Yeah.
A lot about politics has to do with passion.
And optics, right.
Passion and optics. And sometimes the flames of passion are not always ignited by... rationality.
So we now know if the Constitutional Court is anything to go by, that he's not going to Parliament.
Yes.
Right? I mean, even though they're telling us that he can appeal, I thought you couldn't appeal Concord decisions, but that's another matter.
We're not
here for that.
Yeah.
Where has it now that former Chief Justice could be the man? You know, he did tell us that he's going to become president without forming a party. Is this the moment? I mean,
you know, when that thing was said, at some point I thought, no, man, something is not right here. And I mean, former Chief Justice, by the way, if we were to meet, I'm sure we would greet and hug each other. So there's no love lost between each. Between us.
He's still supposed to come here, by the way. He said he's just waiting for the Lord to show him whether he should come here or not. So waiting for that.
How long
moment.
Has it been?
About 4 months.
Okay.
So the Lord, has,
the
not
Lord
spoken.
Has not spoken.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I thought, you know, former Chief Justice, how would this happen now? You have not campaigned, you have not bothered to open a political party or advance a political party. I don't know. Maybe if MK does it, get its 2/3 majority and, you know, amend the constitution, they will install the former Chief Justice.
You know, considering what happened to Jablan Kumar.
Yeah.
Now that we're having this conversation, I'm thinking maybe the former Chief Justice is the man who founded the party for the man who founded the party for the other man. He's probably the real main guy behind all of this.
Jason had got there and booted them.
But what I know will be a big battle. If indeed he took a chance, he's not going to come. I mean, I don't think he speaks Zulu. He's a Zona speaking man in the Northwest. It is a traditional Zulu party. It's presenting itself as that to me, at least.
No, I mean, its core base, because also it functions around a lot of optics and sensibilities of former President Jacob Zuma. I do think that they've tried very hard to, you know, disentangle themselves from that characteristic. I mean,
you think so?
No, I mean, if you think
all I'm saying is,
why didn't the press briefing on the 16th of December last year not take place in Durban? So the fact that it was in Soweto
there are hostels in Soweto.
No, sure.
And they've always been IFP in the past.
No, sure. But I think they were trying to say, look, we're not just for KZN. We are for everyone. And then he has attempted to go and see Dikgosi in Limpopo.
Yeah,
in
some of them turned him away. But anyway, what about, you spoke earlier about the ANC. So you, nationally, are they certainly dipping below 50?
Now, you can never say certainly by any means, but I do think that there's a high chance for the ANC to dip below 50%. But that depends on one critical factor. So in my analysis is that, and having had some conversations with colleagues, is that there's some agreement that this is a turnout election. So by turnout election is that the thing that will ensure the ANC dips below 50% is if the people who are dissatisfied with the ANC's tenure in government actually wake up on the 29th of May and shake themselves off bed and they go and vote. If the voter turnout is allowed to probably dip, say, below 55%, then the ANC may well likely remain above 50%. But if we sustain a voter turnout at about 58%, 60% upwards, then I have no doubt that the ANC is in serious trouble.
Could they, look, and if they were, could they end up, who are they likely to marry with? For me, from where I sit, and I'm not a political analyst, you are. I'm just a golfer, man, who loves Orlando Pirates. But is EFF the most obvious suitor?
No, it's not. It's not. It's not at all. I actually, and a lot of people disagree with me on this one, and I am still sticking to my guns. I really feel the impulse of the EFF is actually to get the ANC out of power. And
I'm glad somebody agrees
These statements that, you know, avoid a doomsday coalition of the ANC and the AFF. I'm not convinced by that. And the DA actually ought to know better than anybody, because the EFF stunned and shocked them in 2016 when they actually voted for their candidates and said, we don't even want to be in government. We're just donating.
We just want the ANC out.
And I mean, Malema was at pains to try and explain that. Remember, he was so much at pains that he needed open air to go hold a press conference in Alex to try and...
politician. I've said to people, so, you know, EFF and ANC coalitions for me sounds like Paris and she's forming one club.
No.
I don't see it happening.
As much as they don't love, there is no love lost between them. I mean, but it's not the instinct. I don't think it's the instinct of the EFF. And that's why the EFF almost makes like dramatic demands of the ANC. Like, I mean, we will not go in coalition with the ANC if Ramaphosa is the presidential candidate. So effectively, you're saying to the ANC, we are dictating to you who your presidential candidate should be. I mean, any party worth its salt will probably tell you where to get off, and that's probably what the ANC is going to do. And that helps the EFF to then be backed into this corner. And, I mean, look at 2021. The EFF in KZN takes up deputy mayorships with the IFP in Nongoma, in Richards Bay, and a few other councils. You look at what they do in Ekurhuleni in 2021. The mayoral candidate of the DA actually refuses to get sworn in to resign the legislature and goes and gets sworn in as the mayor, as the councillor in Ekurhuleni. Then here is poor Tania Kempe. She's just thinking she's going through the process because the numbers do not favor her. And the EFF shocked her. And votes her in as mayor of the city of Ekurhuleni. And for a week, she was struggling to have interviews because actually she had not really bargained properly. She didn't think that it was going to be possible. So I don't think the instinct of the EFF, that's one. I don't think the instinct or the impulse of the EFF is to go into a coalition with the ANC. On the other hand, I do recognize that something has changed or pivoted in the EFF itself, in the sense that they are now interested to be in government, which they previously weren't, and maybe they didn't feel prepared. But I do think now they feel
they're aging.
They're aging. Actually, I'm glad you raised this, because I said to somebody, well, Julius and Floyd are chasing 50 now, so they must start thinking about pension and all of these things and accumulating real stuff, because they also have very expensive taste buds for finer things. But I think so. That's the one. And then secondly, I think it will also depend on what happens to them in this election.
Will they show
momentum? I think they've plateaued in a number of provinces. I think they have potential growth in Mpumalanga. and possibly marginal growth in the Western Cape and maybe in the Northwest. But generally, I think they are beginning to flatten out. I'm not sure. I mean, as some polls really put them as far below as like 8% and so on. I'm not so sure that would really... I mean, their campaign does appear to lack a bit of energy and punchiness and dominance of the electioneering period. I mean, we haven't really... What is the catchphrase from the EFF this season besides the Oppenheimers and things?
Age is a very horrible thing. Yeah. Let's talk about
what
the
does it do from the experience?
It slows you down. John Steers is...
Oh, Johnny.
Vuligate. Well, it seems to...
Dubuli.
Vuligate to get people to leave his party.
Dubuli Nyanga.
For the first time, I'm seeing the DA not even looking good in the Western Cape.
Dubuli Nyanga.
What's wrong? What's happening? Am I reading things wrong about the DA?
Now, first of all, a number of voters don't know John Steenhuisen, the leader of the DA. I think his name recognition is possibly at about 60-65%. That's quite worrying for a politician who has been in the scene for quite some time. Yeah. It means they see him, but they don't really see him. And funny enough, a story a few years ago, when Andre De Ruyter was still the CEO of Eskom, again, I was doing a focus group and with a white audience, by the way, just to be clear. say John Steenhuisen, what comes to mind? And this lady says, the Eskom guy.
No. No.
So John has that kind of thing. The second one is that he actually does irritate a lot of people. Yeah. People don't find him inspiring. They find him a wedge driver, and he's always keen to pick a fight. I don't think he embodies anything presidential about himself. I mean, not least Peter Groenewald of the Freedom Front Plus talking to one of your sister newspapers, the Sunday Times, ahead of the multi-party charter meeting, saying that South Africa is not ready for a white president and that he would go into that meeting supporting Velenkosi Nhlabisa. That was a serious vote of confidence in him. So the leader of the DA, in particular, is actually a problem for the DA. It's a key problem. The return of Helen Zille, and somehow she's just resurfaced.
She's doing interviews everywhere.
I don't know why. Again, this tells you about how the DA is not able to gauge the moment. Helen used actually to be very much loved by a number of people across the racial divide and the political divide. Yeah. She was seen as really trying hard to build this party into this inclusive and, thing. But something switched in her after the 2019 elections. And I blame the short stint she spent at the Institute of Race Relations.
That place seemed to be...
Because she was employed there, I think, in July
2019.
And then she returned to be the chair of the whatever council in the DA. And that's when Mashaba resigned.
Yeah.
Her return was a pivot of the DA away from that DA that was actually trying very hard to access the black vote, as they call it, or the colored vote, as they call it, in a sense where they even make space for these leaders, black leaders and colored leaders, to be part and parcel of the leadership spectrum of the DA. And the DA started obsessing about votes it believed it had lost to the Freedom Front Plus. And in some instances, it did what Joel Netshitenze warned the ANC not to attempt to do, to out EFF the EFF.
Yeah.
And the DA has really been trying to out FF Plus the FF Plus, and it's just not been working.
And Groenewald is smiling. I mean, they're doing the work for him. You know?
No, of course. And I mean, and FF Plus has no ambition to become a 30% party or a 50% party.
They know their space.
They know their base. They know how many of them there is. They know their succession plan, how they need to rotate. And they are quite humble about it. I mean, look at Corné Mulder. He made way for Peter Groenewald, and he's not contesting him.
No.
He gets deployed to debates. He gets deployed to negotiations and all of this, and he allows him space to be.
It seems Mtwana Kapindangene
is still with us.
Did not die with the IFP. Like, I mean, I said it here and everywhere that this is the end of the IFP. I think I was wrong.
No, do it for Shembe.
This is doing it for Shembe.
Do it for Shembe.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's an interesting strategy because it tells you that the real unifying factor for the IFP remains Shembe, and that it may well have been. And I also say the same thing. That, I mean, look, the death of Shenge. I mean, I'd always said the IFP really has to hope Shenge survives until elections because there's a material risk that its momentum could wane in KwaZulu-Natal. And I have no doubt that part of its momentum could be waning. I mean, the battles within the royal family had not been settled by the time Shenge died. Mm-hmm. Then there had to be succession questions around his own role as prime minister to the AmaZulu king. And all of those things have material bearing in terms of what happens. And then we started seeing some moves, right? Velengos and Ihlabisa shifted from Peter Maritzburg to the National Assembly, and then, you know, Nduli taking charge of the province. And there's quite a clear animosity between the two. It plays itself
other
out.
Other people who do what you do were even saying literally, he was chucked out of KZN.
I mean, to make space and to make to make peace in the organization, to keep them apart. Because it was quite clear that, I mean, of course, they'd probably deny it. But it was quite clear that there's no way of reconciling their relationship. Yeah. And I think there's a lot happening in the IFP. I mean, I've been surprised at the absence of my good friend, and I haven't spoken much to him, Khuleko Hlengwa. I mean,
in election debates,
in this and that. And I think he's the national spokesperson.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been in one or two debates, but he's not been as
be the smartest
visible.
But anyway,
well, you said with age, you know. he's not been as visible as one would want or expect him to be visible to make the IFP appeal to younger people and all of this. And I think it's part of the constraints of these of these inner fights. And yes, I mean, they've decided campaign slogan, do it for Shembe. They've decided the face of the campaign is Shembe.
Shenge.
I'm KZN out.
clearly.
Shenge. Do it for Shenge.
And that's what it is, right?
That's what it is.
I mean, individually, those guys, the leaders of the organization were loyal to the man.
Yes. No, and he made sure that they were loyal to him, and he made sure that he was an indispensable part of the IFP. And those who tried to, you know, call for a really robust and vibrant conference, like, you know, the likes of Hosanele Makwaza Msibi the late, Rev Musa Zondi,
that guy used to fascinate me. I remember covering
Sipho Tshabalala.
No. But it will come to me. But I went to cover the IFP conference in 1997.
Oh, wow.
And he was, at the time, touted as the guy who's going to take over.
Oh, wow.
Then when he stood on the podium, I don't know what had happened behind the scenes because we don't know.
Yes.
Right? And he started talking. Then at some point, he started crying and telling us how loyal he is to Shenge. And we knew that was it.
That it was not that true.
There's a plethora of smaller parties. Some of them have been around. Some are new. You know, but your Action SA, Patriotic Alliance, Mzansi, Build One South Africa. What's going to happen there?
No, Chief said.
What's the play there?
Chief said properly. Build One South Africa with Musi.
Yeah, no, the full name,
my
man. Miss My Man, yes.
The only party.
So sorry,
the only party with the name with with the party leader on the name.
Maybe when they registered, there was another Build One South
Africa. No!
They had to add this.
No,
part.
Chief. It used to be Build One South Africa.
Oh.
They amended.
Wow. Okay, let's not digress.
No, so let's not digress. Let's focus. Let's focus.
What does it mean for our politics and what are things going to look like post the 29th of May with these small parties?
Look, Rams, I think both old and new of the smaller parties, what for me it represents is an opportunity for choices for the electorate. I actually find it very difficult in this election when somebody says there are no options. I think it may well be one of two things. Mm. One, either people generally dislike taking decisions. There are people like that who generally dislike taking decisions. They like having one option, at most two.
Or people are overwhelmed by the number of options that there are. But that there are options is not a doubt in
There's
my
no
mind.
Doubt about it. I mean, look at the ballot.
The ballot is two columns.
Yeah.
Left, right, 26.
It's huge.
It's a huge ballot. It's a huge moment.
You take lunchbox into the ballot box.
No, man. And imagine if AMCU had succeeded to register
exactly.
Labour Party.
Yeah.
ACT had managed. These Arise had managed to be on the national ballot. We would really have a fairly large national ballot. But the point really I'm making is that these new and smaller parties represent, at least in my mind, options.
Yeah.
But they also do, in some instances, represent a failure of people to find one another. I mean, if you think about it, on the ballot, there are about three parties that are effectively led by people who were leaders in the DA together. Bongani Baloyi, Shiluba, Herman Mashaba, Action SA, Musi Maimane, Build One South Africa with Musi Maimane.
So at some point they had something in common.
At some point they had something in common. But when they moved out of that tent, suddenly they couldn't work with one another. I mean, at least Bongani went to Action SA. In fact, he's a breakaway of Action SA.
Yes.
So breakaway of the DA, and then breakaway of Action SA. So what does it tell us? It tells us that, I mean, I've been trying to use an analogy of tents. People like existing in their small tents because they can be in charge.
Yeah. I thought it's about power.
This idea of being in charge, it seems to be appealing to some of them. I mean, look at Abel Dau, who was in the DA, went to Action SA, went on to form his own political party, I think in another political party, and then still couldn't manage to make it on the ballot. Now he's a premier candidate in Gauteng for Forum for Service Delivery. And I mean, it's also an interesting thing because in 2021, when I interviewed the president for Forum for Service Delivery, he actually said to me, in 2019, they had learned that it was a mistake for them to stand for national and provincial elections and that they should remain players in the local government sphere because that's where they've gained people's trust, but they don't have enough volume to actually become a national and provincial player. So I was surprised when I saw them on the ballot this time around because clearly parties, I don't know what they are gaming, but if you don't make it to parliament, you lose your deposit to the IEC. So I don't know if they have money to play with or they truly, truly believe that they have a genuine chance.
In fact, I was even thinking, speaking of money, that could the funders of all these new small and, let's say small new and old parties, are they even going to get it to a point where they like bring back the money if these guys don't make it to parliament? Like,
so what,
pay back the money, that's the right.
So I once had a chat with a business person who has funded political parties before. And they said to me, you know, I'm a businessman. I make investments on prospects for return on investment. And he says, you know, politics is the one place where you throw money and you're not expected to have any expectation on return of investment. Which made me think, and I mean, I think there are interesting conversations we can have. And it talks about this idea about how much money should people be allowed to give to a political party. Mm. I mean, politics is expensive in South Africa.
Very expensive.
Let's just not delude ourselves. Yeah. Politics is extremely expensive. I mean, if you look at all these billboards that
and it doesn't generate money.
No, it doesn't generate money. It's a revenue-making scheme, right? It's meant to be a force of good. But sometimes when it fails to be a force of good, then there's a problem. So what is the relationship that should exist between those who donate to politics and those who are in politics? And how does accountability look like without it being seen as though those who donate are trying to influence and interfere with those to whom they donate and make them not be independent and be, you know, champions of their agenda and so on? So I think it's a very complex conversation to have. And when people make donations to political parties, what are they donating for? What are they hoping to achieve? Is it really just about values and democracy and ensuring multi-party democracy survives? And of course, I mean, as we talk about donors to smaller parties, you must really understand what these smaller parties, particularly the ones who are not in parliament and legislatures, what they are up against. This is what they are up against. When Minister Enoch Godongwana delivers his budget speech, or at least when he delivered his budget speech in February, he said, in this year, an additional 200 million rands is going to be put aside to help represented political parties.
Yeah.
Now, that money is shared.
So the guys are starting off a base of some money that comes from the fiscus.
The DA, 40 million rands, because it's got about 20% of the National Assembly. The ANC, 57% of that, about 117 million rands. So, somewhere there. So the point, Rams, is that what do you mean when you say these things? It's not just about simply saying, or take, here is money. You are saying these guys have a base on top of other money they've got. I mean, what has Julius been saying to you guys? No, because the ANC wanted to give itself money. We just accidentally benefited and we saw some money get in the bank. Kring, kring, kring. That's not the luxury the guys who are not represented in parliament and so on have. And therefore, they start off on a really rough base and rough terrain. I mean, look now, in the last disclosures of the IEC, Exxaro has deposited 25 million rands into the multi-party democracy fund of the IEC. Luckily, that multi-party democracy fund is going to be divided up amongst parties post the election.
Yeah.
However, in the Electoral Matters Amendment Act that the president signed earlier this month, which is a problem as well, Parliament tampered with the formula to distribute that money to favor the bigger political parties.
Mm.
So you clearly have a problem in the system where I get people saying, yeah, there's too much money and so on. The base is not the same. The money that is in different pots for represented political parties far outweighs what is possibly available to those who are unrepresented.
Let's get to the end of this. Which provinces are going to experience big changes?
Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, possibly Western Cape.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave Free State hanging.
Yeah, I think Premier Ace will take over. In individuals, I mean, we spoke about JZ. I mean, I've not felt the president of the country. Even, you know, I've not felt him in the game. But I must say that I have felt some of the guys we've mentioned here.
I
have felt Musi. I have felt Herman to an extent. And some fellow called Song Ezozibi. I've felt some of these guys, right?
Yeah.
And I've been fascinated that why am I hearing their voice when they are so
small?
Why am I hearing their voice? Is it because those with platforms are also desperate for new voices?
I think those with platforms are also trying to look around and say, where is freshness?
Yeah.
Where could disruption potentially come from? And I think before MK, if MK wasn't there, you probably would be hearing those guys even much more. But I also think inherently, if you look at the energy of the ANC campaign in 2019 and how Ramaphosa really provided a rescuing effect, if I were to use that word now made dreadful by the DA, he had a rescuing effect on the ANC. And I mean, a number of people became hopeful, even some DA supporters, by the way, which is why I always warn them about this obsession with FF Plus voters. The DA supporters who actually split their votes, they voted the DA in the Western Cape and they voted for Cyril Ramaphosa on the national ballot.
Wow.
They voted for the ANC effectively because they trusted Ramaphosa more than they trusted Steenhuisen.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. There was enough evidence that there was split voting in the Western Cape.
And for this, again, going to these smaller parties, that phenomenon could be that because you're small, we're going to allow you into a province. So somebody could give them a vote in the province knowing that they can't make it national.
No, I mean, but also let's accept that even these new voices you talk about, I mean, let's talk about Action SA 2021, their first election, local government election. They chose to stand in six different municipalities, three metros in Gauteng, and then in KZN, they stood in eThekwini, KwaDukuza, and in Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
just out of those six municipalities in two provinces, Action SA became the sixth largest party in the 2021 election. So what it tells you is that there is an appetite for change. You know, there is an appetite for change. I actually call it this. There's an appetite for change. There's no momentum for change. So a number of people would love to see change, but they're not convinced enough to go out and really put and risk it all, you know, for a party that they are not sure because of that very disappointment factor I spoke about from the Congress of the People time 15 years ago.
Oh.
That, yes, guys, but hey, we've been banned before. And I'm sure some people are having conversation. Hey, mama, let's try this thing now. I went out on the Lahleki, so I want to vote to cope with. And easy.
So, but PR does matter in politics. Or does it matter? Because, you know, sometimes I think, if it mattered, Kaiser Chiefs still has the largest support, but that PR is not working when they look at the league log.
No, sure. Well, my Kaiser Chiefs friends, like Lorato, our friend, will not be happy with us. But I think PR does matter in politics. But I do think that one of the things that is probably returning to our politics is an investigation for substance by the electorate, which is good.
Yeah.
Because politics can't just be like football matches. They are not entertainment.
Yeah.
Politics are a critical part of defining our daily lives as citizens. And therefore, we ought to treat them as substantively as we treat our lives in our personal capacities. Yeah. And therefore, we have to interrogate for substance, for meaning, and for a future that is viable. And therefore, the return of substance, and in part aided by civil society that has really been asking tough questions to political parties. I'm sure you've seen different barometers coming out, different civil society manifestos on ECD, on health, on education, on this coming out, making demands to the politicians in terms of what it is that they should commit to, the agenda that they should commit to. I think that's important. And that has been partly one of the important parts of this election, that the demobilization of society has somehow found its way back into consolidation and to the political conversation. And therefore, PR does matter. But I do think that by the time we get to 2026 to 2029, it will be much more than just how many posters do you have up on the streets. By the way, another element of PR that I think will soon probably lose its relevance over time. And parties spend so much money on posters.
Yeah.
So much. Millions and millions. It's a massive, it's a mega million industry.
They even spend more money to take them down.
Oh, of course. No, of course, because the volunteers, remember, are gone
now.
And you did not get
a law that says
you did not get this percentage you thought you were going to get. Now you must hire a service provider to deflight them. So I think that, you know, PR, as much as it does matter, it does matter how you make people feel. Mm-hmm. So your look and feel is important.
Yeah.
Do you inspire people? Do you encourage them? And I do think, I mean, I always say to people, you know that some people have won idols, not because they are good singers, but because they look good. I won't mention names.
I hope not. Finally, who's going to surprise us, individual or party? Who's going to shock all of us?
Sure. I do think that in the first instance, the MK party will surprise many people because, and I'm saying this with the benefit of conversations with friends. So somebody has asked me, what do I think is the floor for MK party? I do think they'll get 500,000 votes. I really do think they'll get 500,000 votes and more potentially. Yeah. People think, no, that's a lot. It's not possible and so on. So I think once the numbers start crystallizing on that leaderboard at Kalaga Convention Center, at the Results Operations Center, a lot of people will be like, wow, actually they pulled it off. I do think that I don't think there's a surprise per se, Rams, in these elections, rather than who will do wonders. I mean, I think that there's potential for the Patriotic Alliance's emergence in the Western Cape to really eat away on the DA with a couple of other parties. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest surprise of this election would be a coalition government in the Western Cape. Nobody wants to believe that it is possible.
Between the DA and...
Well...
Mabahambe.
Well, the point, though, lastly, what makes this election difficult is that the scales just are tilted in such imperfect ways, province to province. So if you go to KwaZulu-Natal and you test the idea of a multi-party charter, you sort of get close to some logic because the DA is fairly okay there in terms of size, above 10%. IFP will be okay and in terms of size. But if you come to Gauteng, IFP is almost a non-player in this province. And then you say, who would the DA go into coalition with? And then back to your question when you're asking, is the EFF the natural coalition partner for the ANC? And then you go to the Western Cape, who would the DA coalesce around there? Because the ANC is fairly growing in the Western Cape.
Yeah, they're coming
partly
back.
Because of the entire Palestine, Israel. But also I think the disenfranchisement of certain communities in the Western Cape, particularly in the city of Cape Town, in terms of how unequal the distribution of services and the quality of services is. Then what it then creates, Rams, is a complication that says, would you rather have a global coalition in the sense that a coalition that can hold across all the three provinces and nationally? And there aren't too many possibilities outside a DA and ANC coalition and potentially an ANC-EFF coalition and bar one province like the Western Cape.
Why are you discounting? And I want us to conclude.
Yes. Right?
Because if we don't, it will be election time while we
say. True.
Why are you discounting an ANC-MK coalition?
It would hurt the ANC. I don't think you can fire... Well, they've suspended him. There's a disciplinary coming. I don't think you can discipline a person for undermining the ANC and then go into a coalition with them. If anything, there's probably a likelihood of an IFP-MK party coalition in KZN.
Zagaz, thanks for coming.
It is a pleasure. Good to see you,
Rams. See you soon.
Thank you. See you in a new South Africa.
Yes, new South Africa. Thank you for listening to this episode of Taking the Rams by the Horns. Please send your comments to me via email on rams@ramsmabote.com. Let me know what you think of the podcast. Please tell us who you're voting for, or at least voted for. But whatever you do, vote. It does not matter for whom. Download the MySowetan app and listen to more of my podcasts. We're also on Spotify. Follow us on X at Rams by the Horns and at Sowetan Live. From me, Rams Mabote, black ink on finger. Goodbye and God bless.